Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this edition of Combat Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Kiernan. If this is your first time tuning in, check out my archives. Combat Sports Podcast is a podcast for people interested in combat sports, and not just the mainstream ones, but you know, even the eclectic ones. I've had MMA fighters from the UFC. I've had professional boxers, including some of the classics like Larry Holmes, James Toney. I've had UFC fighters from the old days. I've also had lots of wrestlers. So, and it's my intention to continue to do that. And if you are an athlete who is serious about your sport, I don't even necessarily care about what part of your career you are in. If you think you could have a good, you know, energetic conversation about your combat sport, I'd like you to come on my show. Combat Sports Podcast at this time is a nonprofit endeavor. And even if I do ever open up, like, say, a Patreon or something, all of that money will end up going directly to the costs of my kids. We're not exactly a very wealthy family. And so wrestling can be sometimes a very expensive sport. But at this time, I'm not asking for any donations whatsoever. This is more or less meant for not only my personal enjoyment, but also just as more or less a service to the combat sports community. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And again, you know, thank you for checking this out. Go to my archives. You can also, if you look at the description on the show, you will see not only information about my guest today, including his websites, but you'll also see a Facebook group and my Twitter handle. I don't really talk a lot on Twitter, but I do post announcements about upcoming shows. So my guest today is Jason Layton. He is the founder of the Warzone Wrestling Tournament System. Warzone is a new and innovative idea on how to pair kids for youth wrestling tournaments in ways that essentially ensure the satisfaction of everybody involved. So, Jason, I want to welcome you to the show. Give me one second here to unmute your mic, and you'll be good to go.
How's it going, Jason?
Hey.
How are you?
Not too bad. You know, Jason, it's great to finally get a chance to talk to you. I've followed your YouTube channel for many years. My kids have made some use out of your Crab Ride series, and you did a really good job of explaining it. That's actually how I got started. And then following your videos as they were coming out, eventually I got to see a video about Warzone. Now, before we get into that, I ask every guest when they first come on, can you give us some history? Give the guests an idea of where did you get started? In wrestling, I guess, would be your primary sport. I think you've said you've messed around with some jujitsu, but let's start back when you were a kid and what got you into wrestling.
So first, I'd have to say that it was Jean-Claude Van Damme and any of the cheesy action movies from the 80s that got me really interested in just fighting and manly stuff. So I would play fight with my dad when I was 5 years old, and I always thought that stuff was cool. In seventh grade, I moved to a new school, and my mom suggested that I play a sport so that way I'd make some friends, and I chose wrestling, and that's kind of just how I got my foot into the door.
So describe what your early experiences with wrestling were like. What age were you?
So I was 12. I wasn't any good. I wasn't bad. I was a decent athlete. I'd played some hockey as a kid growing up until that point, so I did okay. But I wasn't serious about it yet, and I just kind of thought it was interesting. I'd say I liked it right away, although I did lose my first match, and I remember I cried. My first wrestling match was probably one of the most intense moments of my life up until that point, because it's kind of like public speaking times 10. There's so much anxiety and pressure on you, because you're wearing this outfit and you're in front of all your friends and it kind of feels like you're in a fight. It was super exciting. I remember I lost and was kind of a little baby about it. But then I won the next couple, and then that was it. I was in.
So now, obviously, from starting at 12, did you wrestle in middle school?
I did. So that was my first 2 years were in middle school. And then my freshman year, when I got to high school, I actually got to start as the varsity starter because there were no upperclassmen who were at my weight. I was very small. I was only in the 112-pound weight class as a freshman. I got my butt kicked. I won 2 varsity matches that year.
Now, as you developed it – oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I could keep going and give you more of the history. You want to hear about
Please
when
do.
I start getting good? Okay. So yeah. In ninth grade, I got my butt kicked, but the coach's son and the and another boy on the team were both very good. They were both all county that year. And I was kind of their beat up dummy that year. But as a result of being their training partner, I had a lot of moves, I guess, in my head that other people didn't know about. So in 10th grade, I moved again to a new school. And when I moved to the new school, my parents knew right away, let's get him involved with the wrestling team. Let's meet the coach. Let's get him going before the school even starts. And what happened was, from getting my butt kicked by those guys the previous year, all of a sudden I was kind of one of the best on this new team, because this new team that I moved to, we were in a good team. And that is kind of where I think the fuel for the fire started. Now I was fitting in with the team. I was kind of respected on that year. I probably won about a third of my matches as a varsity starter, which was respectable for a 10th grader. And then after 10th grade is when we started considering off-season wrestling. And that's kind of, as soon as I started wrestling year-round, it was like a rocket ship. All of a sudden I realized, oh, this is a technical sport. If I leverage my brain power and learn as much as I can and get myself in great shape and work really hard and do extra work compared to everyone else, maybe I can really rise and make something of myself. So I'd say a big part of the reason that I got really into wrestling was because it was kind of a way to prove myself in my new school and get notoriety from my peers.
So obviously then, you know, you basically kind of, you figured out the year round thing. I'd say that that's definitely an important step. I remember for my kids, it was like my daughter had kind of set a goal for herself to be a national champion. And I said, well, I just talked to the girl that beat you at the last national tournament you went to, and this is what they do differently. And what I would say initially was that they were kind of resistant to it, but like I waited until about a month into their next season. And, you know, like, I didn't say anything to them. It was like about, hey, you know, by the way, wasn't it worth it? I waited until they won like a bunch of gold medals and beat up a bunch of kids that used to be a problem for them. And I said, so was it worth it? And they both like enthusiastically nodded like a bunch of times. Oh, yeah, it was totally worth it. Totally worth it. You know, but during the summer and the fall, you would have never heard that. You know, they were always like, you know, it was like, oh, man, I got to go again, you know. But I think that's a goal, like as a parent in general, I feel like you have to recognize that kids can set long-term goals, but the part of the brain that understands long-term consequences or benefits isn't even working in most human beings until their mid-20s. So you have to supply a little bit of the push. You don't overdo it, but at the same time, you know, if I had asked my daughter on a given Thursday, you know, do you still want to be a national champion? She would have said, absolutely. But if I then asked her, do you want to play Xbox or do you want to get on the treadmill? What do you think she would say? So, yeah. You know, but she likes her national title. Go ahead.
Wrestling was the first thing I was making my own decisions and making my own sacrifices. I didn't have, my parents were not wrestlers. They did not push me in wrestling other than to drop me off at practice or, you know, pay for tournament fees. They really had no involvement. It was just like, I was a pretty frustrated kid from moving around so much. And this was all of a sudden an outlet for me. So I did make a lot of sacrifices and I was all of a sudden learning about discipline and long-term goals, which was new and very exciting when I finally saw it start working. That just became like a crazy positive feedback loop that I bought into 100%.
That's awesome. Well, in some kids can do that. I would say that's definitely, you do see them. And now as far as like, once you got, you know, through high school, I mean, how did you finish your high school career? Did you feel satisfied with it or?
I've never felt satisfied with anything. I've always fallen short of my goals because my goals are always super lofty. So, a quick little rundown. My junior year, I did not place in the county tournament. I lost in the blood rounds right before placing, and I thought I could have beat the guy. So all I wanted to do was be all county my senior year. I worked super hard. But by the time my senior year came around, I'd been kind of getting brainwashed from really good coaches, and they had totally made me rethink my goals. Being all county was a guarantee at this point. I'd gotten so good. The only goal worthwhile was pursuing a state title. And even that was a short-term goal because at this point it was like, you have to be the NCAA Division I national champion. That's the only one that counts.
right.
So my senior year, I fell short. I kind of choked in the semifinals of the counties. I only took third. But that was – I was really turning the corner at that point. And the next 3 months of all season, I wrestled 90 matches in those 3 months. I had my license. So I was like, I fill up my car with wrestlers. We drive to New Jersey. You drive to Pennsylvania every weekend. And now all of a sudden I was kind of like on the national level. I was beating state champions from other states. And I was doing this really weird thing that nobody else did called the crab ride. At the time, it was kind of an unknown move. There were a few people who did it, but it was super rare. And I was fully committed to it. And now one of the things that had helped me with my crab ride, I started doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu in the end of my 11th grade season when I got my license. So I did that 4 days a week for about 3 months. And that made me really good at moving around on my hips and on my back, which wrestlers think that they don't want to be on their back, but being able to move on your back is a very beneficial skill to have when you wrestle, because a lot of times during scrambles, it's going to be your ability to quickly move yourself out of danger. And so I think that combining trying to learn the crab ride with having spent a couple months doing jiu-jitsu, they just fit together really well. And all of a sudden, I was this awkward style of wrestler that was really, really good on top, that could score a lot of points from the top position.
Yeah, that's definitely a good to be. That's something Ben Askren actually put in one of his DVDs, was he pointed out that if you can get good at top, you can really push yourself forward and maybe even like kind of catch up to kids who have been wrestling longer, because there are multiple reasons, one of which was that nobody pays any attention to bottom. Like, so few coaches really spend a lot of time on bottom. We got into top because my daughter was wrestling boys and, you know, she took to leg riding very easily. We spent a lot of time with Mitch Clark. And when you pointed out, you know, being across your back as a skill, it kind of reminded me of something he said. He's like, put yourself in bad positions on purpose during practice and work yourself out of them. Yeah. And once my kids started doing that, it was crazy. You know, of course, it drove their coaches nuts because they think they're in trouble. But the truth is, you know what's going on. It's like a controlled chaos. It's like surfing. You can't, you know, you can't control the wave, but you can surf. I would agree. Go ahead.
I think the top is the dominant position, period. I think once you master top, the top just wins. I know a lot of coaches will disagree with me, but they're wrong. Top wins. Top is the one position where you are dominating your opponent. There's plenty of different ways to make him very uncomfortable there, and I don't think there's any good system from the bottom for beating a guy who really knows what they're doing from the top.
That's been my experience too, in particular when it comes to leg riding, is that I think that a lot of coaches believe that there's like some kind of silver bullet move that they're going to teach a kid that's just going to get them out, and then they're going to be immune to it forever. And I'm like, well, unless you're going to spend even a tenth as long doing that as my kids spend learning how to put them back in, I don't think that's going to work. You know, and it generally doesn't.
The only way out.
Go ahead.
The only way to get out of a good leg rider is to have the rest blow the whistle from like a stalemate, because the guys who've been spending their whole lives doing it, like, they're so good at it. Maybe you can stop them from turning you, but.
You know, I plan on talking to Mitch Clark about that specific issue, particularly when it pertains to youth wrestlers doing it. But I think that the reason that I looked at it was just, again, physiologically, it just made sense. And every girl that we've ever taught to leg ride has been it just changes everything, because at that point, you know, the boys get really nervous about what's going to happen to them if we get on top. And, you know, I think part of that, and I was talking, actually, my guest yesterday was Marina Gucher, who is a 4-time women's folk style national champion on the collegiate level. Mind you, it's club collegiate, but, you know, it was still 4 national titles, and she did a lot of her scoring on top. Adeline Gray said that she did a lot of her scoring on top. You know, just so, and I think that it's interesting that it gets neglected as much as it does. And it honestly, because of the way that we wrestle in this family, when I see people just cut somebody, it's like, I don't know. To me, that's like, it's like an insult or something. It's like, what are you doing? Why would you give up that perfect position? But yeah. I think American wrestlers in particular, they get very fixated on the neutral position. It's just shoot, 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 shoot. And don't get me wrong, you can win a lot of matches that way, but if that's it, if that's all you got, and you run into somebody who is either A, very good at scrambling, or B, is just as fast as you are, you're going to have a bad day. And I think that's, you know, more or less something that people don't learn.
The only reason that bottom has a chance against top is because the rules of wrestling protect the bottom guy. They've had to make rules to, like, protect their joints. The top man's not allowed to do these moves because top is just so obvious the position of advantage.
Right, and I think that freestyle creates a situation where bad mat wrestlers get to be considered good wrestlers.
Sure.
This is an ongoing argument between me and some of my friends about Jordan Burroughs, for example, was that, you know, his match with Ben Askren would have been very different in folk style. His match with Kyle Dake would be extremely different in folk style. And it's not because, you know, it's not even about which one of them is the better wrestler. It's that the freestyle rules protect wrestlers who are not good on the mat. I mean, if all I got to do is lay here for 5 seconds, the referee will rescue me. It completely changes the game. And, you know, so that's a part about it. I hope that more people, especially the parents of girl wrestlers, if there was anything I could have done differently, would have been to get her leg riding from like almost day one rather than waiting as long as we did. But, you know, even with that, go ahead.
I start the 5-year-old day one crab ride foundation. Foundation is we don't try to flatten the guy out and then turn them over. The foundation is we are good at staying behind them wherever they go. We're always behind you. You're not getting out from underneath us. And
that has a real psychological effect on your opponent too. Go ahead.
It's a totally different paradigm. You know, the break them down, turn them over paradigm makes perfect sense until you start thinking about freestyle wrestling, where the bottom guy's job is to stay flat because it's harder to get turned over when you're flat. So, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, radically different. Right, no, for sure. That was a fun little segue. It's not very often I get to talk to anybody else who's passionate about the top position. I'd say Michigan is neutral leaning, but not like there's still some people who do other things. When we went to Ohio, they were all takedowns. Like, that's all they wanted to talk about. We'd go to an Ohio practice, there'd be 45 minutes of takedowns, you know. And I remember discussing with Mitch Clark about that because he doesn't wrestle like that. He's from New York. And I got to meet one of his teammates from Ohio State who has the guy actually who had to try to wrestle off with him. And he commented about how weird it was because nobody in Ohio wrestles like that, you know, and it's strange too, because they're, you know, Mitch Clark teaches camps in Ohio. And you know, you'd ask kids if they want to go and they live there and, you know, he still gets people, he fills his camp, but frequently it's people coming from all over the place. You know, it's like, we remember, like, there's a girl from Minnesota that's there, you know, things like that. It's interesting to me also just that the negative attitude about it is that, coaches who don't understand it in particular, you know, you get to watch them try to panic and try to figure out how to tell their kid how to get out, but they won't teach it in their room. You know, they don't want anybody to do it in their room, you know? So it ends up being this situation where your kid is completely not prepared for it when it comes their way. I'd say in the early days, there's a similar thing when it comes to headlocks. It's like they just try to pretend it doesn't exist. It's like sticking your head in the sand and then wondering, you know, your kid looks at you, your wrestlers who get headlocked at tournaments then look at you like, what's wrong with you? You know, and so the solution really is to overexpose them to it so that when it does come that they can deal with it. And that's kind of what I'm, you know, some of my kids' partners have figured that out, that, you know, well, where do you want to be learning how to stop a good top wrestler? Do you want to wait until we're at a tournament and it's too late, or do you want to learn now? You know, but otherwise it can be difficult, you know, to find partners sometimes, because, you know, if you're good at that, it really messes up somebody's head. That's for sure. So Jason, obviously, you know, the primary focus today is to be discussing Warzone. Now, you've made a very compelling series of videos about it, and I think that it kind of gets to the heart of one of the things that I feel is a serious problem comes to youth wrestling, and as a result is the reason why wrestling itself, and I know that some people don't want to hear this, but the reason we are regarded as a fringe sport that has to fight to exist, that is in many cases not even paid attention to, is because we can't keep people's attention. And the statistics on that, that both Ben Askren and Wade Shalley share, are that apparently wrestling only retains about 40% of its participants after 2 years of participation. And I don't think it's an accident that that also tends to be around the time that the novice division ends in many of the states. And these kids are basically in a situation where maybe they started at 13 or something, and then they get kicked out onto the mat with kids who've been wrestling since they were five. And there's just no way to make that fun. There's no way to make that interesting. And we are the only combat sport where there are no like ranking systems or, you know, means of, you know, basically just to ensure that the tournaments are more competitive and more fun. Like USA Boxing will not sanction a youth boxing bout if one of the boxers has five more matches than the other boxer. Now, you couldn't do that for wrestling, obviously, but boxers only compete about every 4 or 5 months anyway. But, you know, then you compare it to the martial arts styles. You have jiu-jitsu, judo, karate, you know, where not only is there a rank system to help determine, you know, just how long somebody's been doing something, but also what syllabus level have they achieved in technique. You know, you can expect a green belt in judo generally to know a certain number of throws and a certain number of pins, you know, and, but then they're generally going to only go up against people who've also been exposed to that same syllabus. Whereas in wrestling, you might run into your first leg rider without any kind of preparation whatsoever, literally in your first match. You know, there's no way to gauge that. And I think that one of the biggest problems with it is that rather than recognizing that this is an issue, I mean, leaving aside any of the other problems, which are like some kids have way better resources. Do they have more money? Do they have better partners? Do they have better coaches? Do they have access to better practices? These things are all an issue. You know, are their parents good at coaching? That's another really big problem. You know, and all of those things exist within the other sports. But like, say, for example, you have some phenom Taekwondo competitor, you know, who's has a parent who's like a 6-degree black belt who is an Olympian. That kid will do really well, but it'll also belt rank up, and then your kid will never see that kid again. You know, they'll be gone, and they'll be moved on to other technique, you know, other levels of competition. We don't have that in wrestling. We just kind of basically throw everybody together, and then when kids don't enjoy that, I've seen one of two reactions, neither of which what I say is intellectually honest. One of them is to blame parents, that apparently kids would magically be totally fine with getting their butts kicked every single weekend by kids that they can't possibly hope to defeat. And if only the parents would just stop talking about winning and losing, that the kids would just magically figure that out. I don't feel that's realistic. I don't think it's honest. I think I've seen, you know, plenty of videos of grown adults freaking out at losing wrestling matches to know that we can't expect that little kids would just be okay with it. You know, but the other, I would say even more difficult reaction is when people romanticize the problem, where they say, oh, well, wrestlers are a rare breed and only certain
shut
kids are
up.
To do this.
Just
I know,
up
I know.
With it.
Just I know.
Shut up with it already. Seriously, I can't stand it. Listen, wrestling is one of the most natural things for human beings to do. They all do it. If you leave children alone together, they'll start wrestling with one another and they'll start having fun. When it becomes not fun is because one is beating the hell out of the other. It's just that's when it stops being fun. If wrestlers always were kept in groups where it was like challenging and exciting for them, yeah, sure, maybe they'd lose sometimes. Maybe once in a while they get poked in the eye and they start crying. But it's not this like humiliating, I don't have a chance type of experience that we put a lot of our youth wrestlers through. In youth wrestling, it's really the cream rises to the top, and everybody else just figures out that wrestling's not for them. And I think that is the main reason why we don't keep a lot of people in our sport. I'd say there's two reasons. For one, we don't take good care of our beginners, and they are fodder for our champions or even fodder for our intermediates. And we don't take good care of the parents because after seeing their child get their butts kicked, like it's a confusing experience. They don't know when they're up. They're waiting around at the event all day. It's very unorganized compared to all other sports like soccer, where it's like show up at 10 a.m. and it's very clear what's going on. And we leave at 11. Wrestling, you don't know when you're going to go. You don't know who you're going to get. you have to worry about the weights of your child, and cutting weight becomes like a competitive game for who's better at sucking their 8-year-old down, because if you suck them down, you have a competitive advantage. It's just, it's not a good way to organize the sport, so that way it's friendly and welcoming to lots of different families. And I'm changing it, so.
Right, and that's what brought us together. My only final point that I was getting at was that I've seen kids train. Like when we did boxing, we met a lot of former wrestlers, and they explained that their problem wasn't, obviously, if you're going to go to boxing, it's not because you're a weak-minded kid. It's because they just got sick of the way that it was taught, and they got sick of the competition model. You know, and I guess that brings us to, what is Warzone, and why should parents be checking it out?
Sure. So Warzone is a way to pair wrestlers up in competitive matches that are appropriate for both children. It has two main benefits. Benefit number one, your child is going to wrestle another child who's very close to them in age, weight, and skill. And we'll talk more about how we determine skill in a little bit. But just know that when you show up to one of the Warzone competitions, your child is only going to end up in close matches that are very appropriate for their level, whether they're a 4-year-old who's never wrestled before, or they're an 18-year-old superstar. If they're 200 pounds, if they're 40 pounds, you're going to end up only going against kids that are fun and safe for you to wrestle against. And the other thing that makes it very convenient is that it's very fast. We're not going to keep you waiting around all day. We have total control of how long people are there from when they arrive to when they leave. Most events that I do are anywhere from a 2-hour time window where you're going to be there for 2 hours and you'll probably get up to 5 or 6 matches. Or if I'm working with really little kids, we'll do like an hour wrestling event where kids get 3 or 4 matches each in 1 hour. You know you're going to be there from 11:30 to 12:30. That's it. You can go about and have the rest of your day. So those are the two things. The way it all works is it's made possible by what we call the weight adjusted rating system. And it's just a really accurate, objective way of measuring skill in wrestling. So we'll know before a match happens the rating of both children and how likely it is that either one of them will win the match. And we try to not pair kids outside of like between 30 and 70% likelihood of winning. We don't want to put a kid out against another kid where he's only going to be able to win 1 out of 100 times. That's such a mismatch there. We shouldn't be forcing that match onto the weaker kid. Now, if a kid wants to challenge himself and wrestle someone who's the state champion, sure, he's able to do that. I have no problem putting out a match like that. But the ones that we're going to make for you, we only want you wrestling people that are going to be appropriate.
And that's fantastic. I know, I think that would be something that could really push youth wrestling forward. I think it would solve so many problems. And, you know, I guess, you know, there are questions that will inevitably come up, you know, like what if only one state champion caliber wrestler shows up at a given age group? Go ahead.
So we don't have age groups. We don't have weight classes. We just have live pairing. So we have the computer. Inside the computer, there's information about each wrestler. And we use 3 different things to determine the matches. We know every wrestler's age, we know every wrestler's weight, and we know every wrestler's weight adjusted rating, which is their measurement of skill. So if we have one wrestler who shows up, let's say that's the 12-year-old state champion, and no one is even close to him there, we might be like, okay, well, this 13-year-old who's 5 pounds heavier than him and whose rating is slightly lower than his, that makes sense to be a good match. So what will happen is if you're going against someone who's lower rated than you in skill, they're likely to be slightly heavier than you or slightly older than you. And we can take the elite 12-year-old and be like, okay, this 15-year-old, he's terrible. He's never really wrestled before, but look at their ratings. They're so close. We know this is going to be a good match. And we'll put them out there together. And like the software works really good. It's pretty amazing to see, because sometimes we've sent kids out there and the parents are like, oh, I don't know about that. And then they go out there and it's a fantastic match for both children. And it's like, oh, you gotta trust the data. I do want to clarify though.
No, go ahead.
Since, since I mentioned that sometimes you'll be going up against someone who's heavier than you or lighter, we do have maximum constraints on what we'll allow to happen that we consider safe. So what I mean, I might be able to know that these two kids, one weighs 50 pounds and one weighs 100 pounds, but they're just the right skill levels for one another. Even though they both have an equal likelihood of winning that match, it's much more dangerous for the lighter wrestler. So we wouldn't allow a match with that much of a weight disparity to happen. Usually, large weight disparities aren't necessary at all. It just depends how many kids we have. The more kids we have, the better the system works, and the closer you're going to be in weight, age, and skill.
Now, they obviously, I believe I read that you have the final approval anyway, so like if you don't like a match, there's nothing to stop you from just not taking it, right?
I'm manually pairing every single match. So
okay.
We're sitting at the computer, you know, it takes 5 seconds to generate about. We're looking at the data the whole time. So, yes, I'm not going to put – if I do not currently have a match for a kid, I'll skip him and I'll wait until I have a good matchup for him.
I believe I'm trying to remember how this all goes down. Was there a phone app or how does it work?
So it's you use your cell phone to do it, but it's just our website. On your phone, you log into your account and then you just click, there's a green button that says find a match. You press find a match, you get a text message that says you're now waiting in line, be ready to wrestle. Maybe about 15 minutes later, you'll get another text message that says you've been paired in a match, go to mat 3. You'll be up in 10 minutes. And it's quick. I exaggerated a little bit there with the amount of time it takes. It's usually about 20 minutes total for clicking the green button to actually being out there and wrestling.
That's definitely acceptable. And the fact that you get to click the green button when you need to is great, because if your kid needs to go to the bathroom, if your kid needs to eat or whatever, you're not in this situation where you're like trying to figure out, well, son, I'd like you to be able to eat right now, but you could be up any moment. And that's always a problem at these tournaments. Go ahead.
Well, and that's also an annoying thing for kids, because when you put children in round robin tournaments where they've each got to wrestle 3 times, sometimes the kid gets hurt in his second match and either doesn't want to wrestle his 3rd match. And now you've got a kid who's not getting his match, or gets forced to wrestle into it anyway when he doesn't want to wrestle because his leg's bothering him. So this just allows people to opt into matches when they want. And when we first came out with this, we thought that, you know, some people would, that everybody would want to wrestle a ton. And then what we're finding is that some people are happy with getting just 2 matches, and that some people want 7 or 8 matches. But if we give them the choice, it works a lot better.
Now, I mean, that was one of the other benefits that just occurred to me. I mean, like, what if your kid just, I don't know, maybe he bumps his knee or something and, you know, so he's not ready to go right now, but he might be in, say, another 30 minutes. You know, that takes the whole pressure out of it, and you can come back when you're really ready.
Well, there's nothing worse than being at an unorganized tournament and waiting an hour to find out that the other kid's not going to wrestle you, and you've just been waiting around in this sweaty gym all day. Sucks.
Right, and that's a big problem with our sport in general, especially at the larger tournaments. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the families have trouble with it too. You know, is that it's not like going to Little Timmy's baseball game. You know, you're going to ask, like, you know, your aunts and uncles and everything to just go sit in the, you know, the stands for hours and hours and hours, and then you wrestle once, and then hours, you know, like not, you know, not hours and hours, but still, there's an awful lot of downtime. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's the truth. Sometimes there is. We've got it down. It's like a science. You'll know you're arriving at 11 o'clock and you're leaving at 1 o'clock. You can invite your family, and it's quick. They can show up. They can watch you wrestle 5 or 6 times, and you can go home.
Now, do you have specific mat assignments, or is it more like every match might be on a different mat?
Every match might be on a different mat. That's all handled through the text message system. So we call it the dispatch system. It dispatches each mat to the mat. You goes to whichever has the shortest line.
And that was something that I would say that, you know, most of the time you kind of do know what mat you're on, at least here in Michigan. But as far as to when you're going to be up, it's always a struggle. And they don't want you to camp right next to your mat through the whole tournament. They want you to go sit down. But the problem is that so frequently, you know, using the track wrestling system, your bout numbers that you just read on your paper may not even be right because they change frequently throughout the tournament, you know, or, you know, they might skip a match and they don't tell you. Most of the time, I would say they don't usually forfeit somebody. Like, they try pretty hard to make sure they find everybody. But, you know, I remember all the time, because you never know what the attitude of the specific referee might be. You know, you're just thinking to yourself, well, geez, I could gamble and go, you know, go get something to eat, or we might miss our match, you know. And this kind of eliminates all of that, you know, all of those problems, all those complications. Now, what kind of reception have you had? I know that we've talked a little bit about this, that you've approached some of the major organizations. You know, what have your experiences been?
So initially, when I first told some of the, you know, older guys who ran things by me, they were like, kind of laughed at me. So I was like, all right, guys, I'm going to build this thing, and hopefully you'll support me once you see it starts working. And it's been a very, very good reception. So far, we've got about 2,500 kids rated in our system. We've ran something close to around 10,000 matches. Where I'm most excited about is how well it's working for 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds. That we are having such great success. And it's kind of, because I'm a coach as well, it's changing my paradigm of how we should introduce children to the sport. I now believe that for 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds, here's the order that you should be introduced to the sport. You should start with practices that involve just exercise with no contact, and that the initial contact when you're first going to finally wrestle should be in an actual match against another wrestler, another little boy or girl, using the Warzone system. And the reason we do it like this is because your first time wrestling, you need direct adult supervision on your group only. It's got to be you. It's got to be a coach standing right there that can stop it as soon as something goes wrong or becomes dangerous. Because 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds, it's so easy for them to accidentally hurt one another. And when a 4-year-old gets hurt, it's almost like a traumatic experience for him, because it might be the first time that he's been dominated by someone else. So when we run the competitions for the little guys, the ref is always over the top of them and will stop the match immediately if it becomes unfun for either of the children. And we'll just enter the results into the computer. It'll shift them to where they belong, and we'll be able to get them back out there again. I believe that this is a much better way to teach the moves in wrestling, because once they start wrestling in matches and decide that they're trying to win, that's where they can begin to start figuring out the strategy. And then only down the road does it make sense for them to actually start learning different movements. I remember, you know, when I learned wrestling, like, they were teaching us drop steps on the first day, and like, you don't start using a drop step until you've got a lot of live wrestling under your belt and kind of have much better control of your body. For beginners, let them go live to learn the basics, and then they start learning strategy after that.
So I think that you definitely touched on something that's very important. It comes down to like those really little kids, which is a group of people that I think that coaches are still trying to figure out how to handle. I know that one of the secrets of Dundee's success is that we have a coach who has a specific practice just for kids that are that age. I think that that's really important, because it also seems like maybe, the team, you know, might have one or two kids like that. So they just kind of flop around on the mat, but there's no real structure for them. They just kind of are there, you know, and then hopefully the kids like it and, you know, and stick to it. At Dundee, we have a separate practice for kids that age, and that's been beneficial. I definitely agree that there has to be a different approach. I know one of the things I think I shared this with you that was shared with me was that in Russia, kids actually do Greco-Roman first, because kids are not even ready to penetrate in many cases. Like, that whole part of their body is not even developed enough. And what you find is that you're trying to get a kid to shoot all the time who literally can't even force his weight back up anyway. So if they do pull it off, they're going to do it badly, and then they're going to get really bad muscle memory that you're going to then spend a long time trying to fix. Like, my son tried to shoot from 6 years old, but, you know, what does a 6-year-old shot look like? Well, we're going to bend over at the waist, and I'm going to reach down and grab your leg, which literally only works on really terrible kids. You know, and I think that whereas you see it, kids basically kind of Greco with each other anyway. Like, that's what they try to do.
Greco is the way that they do it. For that's how kids wrestle. The natural way to wrestle is to just, like, grab the other guy's body. It's not to bend down and get his legs. That is a more advanced strategy that they figure out as they move on.
Yep, I would agree. And I think that you can do things that will help them down the line. I mean, you can develop Greco-Roman skills that are going to be helpful to them for the rest of their life, but you're not going to develop a real functional shot in a 5, 6, even 7-year-old in many cases that's going to help them with anything later. There's a couple of exceptions. Like, you can kind of teach a kid how to blast double. I think that little kids try to snatch single, you know, and I don't know why more coaches don't try to actually, because theoretically they could physically pull that off. It's just a question of whether or not they can get it down. But, you know, I definitely think that there's something to be said about, instead of trying to go against the grain, look at what a kid is going to try to do and then build off of that. And I think that's true at all ages.
Yeah, I agree.
So now when it comes to, I guess, I know that the New Way organization is, I guess, letting you handle like rookie tournament stuff. Is that, am I correct in hearing that? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm doing my first two events with New Way are coming up very soon. I'm doing the Rookie Rumble in Oklahoma will be the first one. And that is in about 4 weeks, I believe.
Yeah. We'll be in the area. Maybe I'll come watch. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. So,
you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I've wanted to work with New Way for a long time. In New York State, we have NYWAY. I've worked with them before, but New Way is like the big organization. I think they've already got a business model on a nice structure for putting together duels and tournament style events. But to add the Warzone style, I think is going to be just like a nice fit with them. So I had a good conversation with the president of the organization. We spoke for like an hour or so. We see pretty eye to eye on how we want wrestling to be. So I think it's going to be a good fit. I'm excited to work with them.
Excellent. Have you made any overtures to USA Wrestling or to AAU?
So I've tried. I reached out to USA Wrestling like when I had first kind of created the software. I kind of showed them what I had going on. So USA Wrestling is like a big organization that's primary focus is the Olympic team. Like, that is really the core of the organization is about that, as far as my understanding of it. And they are very set in their ways, because any big organization has to be that way. I'd love to start working with USA Wrestling in the future. They do provide insurance for our events, so thank you, USA. But I do think that they are like probably the biggest fish in the sea, and that I could really help them if they would let me.
And I really hope that they do, because, I mean, your system could work for all three styles. Like, there's no reason why it would change at all for a freestyle like Greco. I don't know if you'd want to give a kid a different rating, perhaps, in a different style. But
So we do it already in jiu-jitsu as well. And the only thing that we might do different from one style to the next is the amount of skill that we easy way to explain it without getting complicated. How much does weight matter? Weight matters differently in different sports. You know, in a sport like tennis, weight doesn't matter at all. In a sport like boxing, it matters probably a lot, probably the most. Maybe wrestling's the most, I don't know. Jiu-jitsu weight matters, but not as much as it does in wrestling.
Right. So you do change the system a little bit then at that point. You might be a little more open to...
A slight calculation that changes it. There's no computer programming that needs to be done or anything. We just change one of our numbers, that's all.
Can kids get rated then in different styles? Like, this is my jiu-jitsu rating and this is my Greco rating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say, like, for, you know, early on, for example, my son would probably have been national level Greco well before he was folk style national level, just because he spent more time on it. So inevitably, I would, you know, if I was to try to suggest to somebody how good he was, I would definitely say he was better at Greco-Roman at that time than folk style. You know, so, but yeah, that it sounds like, you know, you're tackling a lot of problems there. Did you ever talk to AAU or World of Wrestling?
No, I don't even know who those guys are, to be honest with you. I'm on the East Coast. I don't think they're out here, or at least they're not in the Northeast.
It's not uncommon. That's one of the things that's weird when you're trying to talk about wrestling organizations. Like, so for example, in Michigan, USA Wrestling is like barely holding on by a thread. And it, like, our Greco freestyle season is pretty much all they do, because the My Way organization, which is the New Way organization, is like utterly taken over Michigan. So the only thing left really is for USA to do is freestyle and Greco. And mind you, they are starting their own folk style organization, which is actually doing pretty well now. But for the longest time, My Way was like the Comcast, you know, like monopoly up here. And the only thing that they didn't touch was freestyle and Greco. So it's difficult, especially if you're a kid who comes from one of those states and you're interested in the international styles. You know, but so for example, talking to, say, my friend in Minnesota, she was astonished that that was the case, because in Minnesota, there's no New Way organization, but USA Wrestling owns Minnesota. They run everything. In Ohio, there's a small, really small New Way organization that might do like three events a year, and the rest of them are all private, like privately run club kind of tournaments. And that's it. You know, the USA is there, but its presence is very small. So it's interesting is that it could be completely different everywhere you go. If you do later on, though, I could put you in touch with the AAU national coordinator. She's a nice lady. And that organization is actually, their coaching certifications are cheaper. Their wrestling cards are cheaper. And they don't even really want any of your money. They're basically just kind of functioning as a sanctioning body. And you can order medals through them, but you don't have to. They're trying to make a comeback in Michigan right now. I think more competition is good when it comes to stuff like that. But, you know, I hope that more people, you know, what I would like to see, I think that would be interesting, is that, you know, it's good that you're going to be in a situation where you can, you know, put the rookies against, you know, other rookies. But I also think you could probably draw a lot of attention if you could make a state champ war zone and just say, you know, state champs from all over the country, come to our war zone, you know, and just have an all advanced war zone. I think that that would probably attract a lot of attention too.
You know, I think hosting an event, like, truth is, the software doesn't, we can do everyone at once. People don't understand that. So it's going to be very hard for me to get all the rookies to show up when I'm also inviting the state champions, but
fair.
Like, they're not going to wrestle one another. There's such a wide disparity and like a large pool to choose from matchups, that we could put everyone together. The more kids we get at once, the better the software performs. The most I've had so far at once was 500 kids. I did that in Utah this year. I'm looking forward to the point where we can get up to like 2,000 kids and be running it on 40 mats at once, because once we get to that point, everything's going to work. So it's going to work so much better than it's already working, and I'm really excited to see that. Once we get up to numbers like that, we're going to have wait times of like 3 minutes for when you want to wrestle a match, where you want to wrestle a match, you press the button, and 3 minutes later, now you're ready to go. You're going to be up on deck.
That's going to be spectacular. And, you know, it also occurred to me, I mean, there's really no reason why this couldn't go all the way up the chain. I mean, you could do this up to, you know, even collegiate level, depending on where you're at. There's no reason to stop you. You know, especially for some of these organizations that, like, you know, maybe clubs or whatever.
Let me tell you what we don't do. We're not a tournament. We're just a way of tracking skill in wrestling and pairing kids up on the fly. As a result, we could never determine who the state champion is. The state champion needs to be determined by a ladder tournament that has 30 kids enter at the same weight and see who wins at the end of the day. And that's the best part of wrestling. That is my number one favorite thing about it. It's the putting it all on the line for that one moment it's all going to come down to. But we are really good at managing the, like, getting prepared for it. We can rank them all, and we can say, hey, you're the best 153-pound 13-year-old in the state, and you're the second best, and you're the best 152-pound 12-year-old in the state, and we can do lots of things like that. But that's not determining a state champion. That's just determining like a highest rated.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, could you theoretically, if you like when a new kid was being put in, if you had like maybe some information on their background, give them a slightly higher rating? You know, if you know coming in, for example, some kids like that, three national titles.
When you enter, there is a questionnaire that you fill out your first time. And we use that, and then we use that data to place you accurately. So we place the beginners with the beginners, we place the intermediates with the intermediates. In the event that someone lies, which does happen because that's one of the problems youth wrestling has. Everybody wants their own kid to do better. So often people kind of err on the side of caution and say, my kid's a 2 out of 5 instead of a 3 out of 5. It doesn't matter if that happens. The software will quickly move you to the right spot. So it might take a match or two for us to realize that you're not a 2,500, you're a 3,500, but it'll happen fast. And we can see it unfolding, you know, as I'm creating matches, I can see the kid's track record. You know, if you're 3-0 and you just started here, every match you get is going to be getting harder.
That's definitely a fantastic around. Because it guards against one of the problems that we constantly have with the novice division is people sandbagging it. Yeah. And some of them, I think, are actually consciously doing it as some kind of a training tool. Because I remember one year there was a kid who was in my daughter's novice division the whole year and then went to regionals and won and then like placed at state. So I'm like, so how does that work? You know, it's like, why were you in our novice bracket the entire year? I don't know if maybe they think they're having their kid work on specific moves or whatever. I mean, but whatever it is, it would be great to have a system that just says, nah, I think you need to move on now, you know, and in ways that they can't argue with that are tabulatable, you know, is there anything that is going on as far as like, I guess, first of all, obviously I have your website linked here, and with this COVID thing, everything's kind of like thrown into disarray. I know that for a while, you were basically just openly saying, hey, I'll come do this for free. You know, just tell me where to come. You know, if somebody wants to give this a try, you know, do they just kind of contact you on the website?
Yep. WellRunTournaments.com. My email, my phone's on there. Give me a ring. We'll get you going. I want the data on all the kids. We can just get it started. I want – in the United States, we should have the entire country rated. That is like my main goal. I think that will change everything.
I think it definitely would, and I think that even some of the elitist kids at that point would look at it from a perspective of, you know, now I get to see where my rating is at. That's why I said that, you know, while this will certainly protect our newbies, it'll also, you know, that's another thing is that some parents, they have really advanced kids and they don't want to waste their time. You know, they feel like they need to find better kids, you know, and I can understand that. You know, it's one of the reasons why people spend so much time going to travel tournaments and stuff like that is that they think that's what they need. You know, and if that's the case and you only want to wrestle those kids, then you don't have to go through a bracket of kids that maybe your kids shouldn't even be wrestling, to get to the finals match and get the one match that you really wanted. You know, with your system, we could end up in a situation where there's like 3 or 4 kids on that level and then they just wrestle each other and then they're satisfied and they go home. So at the end of the day, this really helps everybody. It's not just a shield essentially for the younger kids either, or the newer kids.
I'll tell you who it doesn't help. It doesn't help the people who only want their kids to win and never lose, because it kind of makes it hard for them to continue lording over what they have been. Because sometimes you'll get like the best kid in the state who's very, very light for his age. Let's say like the number one kid at 50 pounds. And like, he would never go and wrestle the kids who weigh 53 pounds because he makes that lowest weight class and he's the best and doesn't push him and isn't being pushed, which isn't good for his development. But some people have the strategy of, I want my kid's youth record to be, you know, 204. And you know, like, okay, that's great, but you weren't challenging your kid. I truly believe that all wrestlers from the bottom to the top, their record should be somewhere between 30% and 70% win to loss ratio.
That means especially if you want them to develop.
Challenging yourself, You know, I mean, I understand that some of the good kids feel that they can't wrestle and that it's hard to find those kids where they can get losses from, but like, it's really not if you let me pair them.
It would also help with the kids who sometimes are just more physically developed. You run into those kids too. Like, you know, my son is in a weight class that for whatever reason, like he has kids that look like they're built out of pipe cleaners in his weight class. And then he has kids that look like, you know, they've just got muscles all over themselves. I call them like the Soviet science experiments. And he's had that disparity all the way back since he was very little. You know, so he's not even the smallest one in that chain, but there was a kid in his group that, like, every single weekend, you know, he was just this muscled out kid who just, like, you know, he had thighs that were like as big around as this, you know, as my son's older, you know, by his sister, like just enormously developed kid. And he didn't even have to use any technique. He'd just smash kids and then it would be over. So it was more like, well, let's see who takes second today, was every time the kid showed up. And one of the things about that, though, is that if that's your kid's wrestling experience, meaning the one who's winning all those matches, something that my high school coach, the high school coach for Dundee said was that, well, I've seen what happens to those kids. They get to high school and now everybody's grown up and they don't have that advantage anymore. And they didn't take any time to develop any technique. And he said that frequently those kids don't last because they also never learned how to lose. So it, if they do, they actually spend a lot of time trying to catch up. Go ahead.
One of the best lessons that wrestling teaches is humility. And you don't want to deprive your child of that. They need to understand that, like, if they didn't work hard enough, they don't get the win, or that sometimes you're just going to get beat by the better man that day. And it's back to the drawing board, work hard. It is a valuable lesson to learn, because you will not be able to pad their record their whole life.
Right. That's a really important part of it. And, you know, but that system can also be gradual. And I think that's essentially what you're accomplishing here, particularly when it comes to, you know, kids at a certain technical level. I've seen what happens, because there are people who, for example, believe that the best way is to only expose your kids to tough kids all the time. And actually, it was from George St. Pierre's book, The Way of the Fight. He mentioned that when he's getting ready for a fight, he goes, does his jiu-jitsu with white belts first, because he can develop his offense with them. And then he goes and finds black belts that he knows are going to beat the dog crap out of him so he can work on his defense. And he said that if you get too much of one or the other, you either get bad defensive habits that you're not going to get away with anybody good, or you can't ever develop your offense because you can't ever get the muscle memory, because you might get that one arm bar every hour. You know, how good are you going to get at that move? And I realized that for developing kids, it's the same thing. You know, you expose them a little bit, but you can do that at a rate that they're ready for. And I think that's the major issue that I think that people need to grasp if we want this sport to continue to grow. So Jason, you also are a youth coach. Do you want to talk a little bit about your team in case anybody wants to come by and learn how to crab ride?
Sure. So I am the owner of the Dynamic Wrestling Academy. We are a private academy that's open 7 days a week. We train children as young as 3 years old, all the way up to, you know, college wrestlers, even the occasional adult. And we run so many different sessions for so many different age levels and skill levels. And we try to be as friendly as possible to wrestlers of all ability. I don't know what you really want me to tell you about it. It's pretty great. I spend most of my time doing that.
You know, and that was what I needed to hear, was just in case anybody wanted to look you up, basically. I do remember, just on some other topics related to youth wrestling, you know, we were talking about things like, for example, the duels. And duels are definitely a good way to get a lot of matches for kids, but that there seemed to be a situation where sometimes the teams are so stacked that it's the conclusion is so inevitable.
I can't stand it. It's all the good at the youth level. I can't stand it. I love it at the high school level. High school is great because high school, you're stuck where you live. You can't just become friends with all the other good wrestlers and form a super team and like leave your real teammates behind. In high school, if you live in this town, You're stuck with these teammates, and you guys got to make it work together. And it really evens the playing field. One of the frustrating things for me about youth duels is I want to bring my team to an event, but not my entire, for one, my entire team is not good enough to go. For two, we're a really good team, but like we can't beat a recruit only team that's got the state champ from every state, you know, not without, I probably need a few years, maybe by the time we get to high school.
That is definitely a serious problem, especially for people who just want to get involved. They can't even get on a team. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's either they can't get on the team or like you kind of got to like work your way up. Like you start by getting on some of the bad teams that end up going against the other bad teams, which is how it should be in a way. But I'm a little frustrated with duels. I do think that they're a good experience for the kids. I don't think that they're a good experience for the coaches. If you're a dad, that's a different story. I think that's got to be an awesome experience to, you know, be your own child's coach. But me, as someone who runs a private academy, there's not much incentive for me to take my team to a duel because I'm probably only taking 5 or 6 kids out of the 100 that I coach. And, you know, I'm giving up 3 days.
In addition to just the bragging that goes on and just like the way that like there's like almost kind of an elite snobby clique of people that do this. And it's funny because they're basically bragging about their ability to recruit kids they didn't even build.
I would love it if I was in with them. I know if my child was like the number one on the superstar team, I'd love it too. So I get it, but it's just it's frustrating for the coaches. I don't want to bring a team, and I think a lot of other coaches don't want to either.
Yeah, Ben Askren mentioned that he felt that a lot of the dual teams have like so many little weights that are hard to fill, and you know, especially for a national duel, he was just kind of commenting like, "So how much do you think your 5 and 6 year old that wrestled 43 pounds in Virginia Beach got out of that experience?" You know, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know where I stand. Yeah, so I don't know where I stand on that because from a wrestling perspective, being a champion at 5 or 6 years old is completely useless. It does nothing for your future development. I know that for a fact. You do not have to start that young. You can start wrestling at 12 or 13 and still definitely catch up by the time that you are an autonomous man. But that 5 or 6 year old who is tough might be really confident in his social life at school. And he also, you know, he can defend himself. And I think when you're young is when you really need to worry about bullies and stuff. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have kids get really good at wrestling for their age. I think it's probably good for their lives. But the parents have to be careful that they don't inflate their child's ego too much because it's going to keep getting harder. It does not stop getting harder.
And I would also say that, you know, particularly for families that may or may not even have a lot of money, like we in my family, we emphasized more on camps, you know, because we can only afford so many travel things, a year. I will say that it makes more sense to go to a duel than it would to go to an individual tournament. Like I get these experiences from parents maybe who took their kid to Tulsa and went to and out, and they're like, well, that's like $2,000 I'm never getting back, you know, depending on whether or not they flew or, you know, like depending on where they came from, you know. But it seems to me that they would all get a hell of a lot more out of it if they were traveling to a large war zone event as opposed to going to a to and out tournament. I think that's, you know, a big issue because you have no idea what you're going to get out of that experience. If your kid gets hurt in the first, you're going home, you know, if they're not ready to come back on the mat. But if they were at a big, giant, you know, Tulsa level war zone event, that all goes out the window because their kid has as much time to recover as he wants, you know, or she, as the case may be. You know, that's one of the reasons why I hope that this takes off, is that it could make so many aspects of things better. Because when you think about it, people who are going to events like that anyway, they're just trying to get a quantity of mat time, of quality matches. And there's really no guarantee what you're going to get out of an individual tournament. You're going to get a lot of matches in a duel as far as whether or not they're good. That's kind of randomized, whether or not they're appropriate skill level. That's kind of randomized. You know, it's certainly not randomized for the people that more or less stack their teams from, you know, all 50 States, like we were discussing earlier. But, you know, I remember getting
a couple, they get a couple fish the first round, you know, where they where they get to win 70-0 and pin every kid. And then when they get into the gold pool, that's where they're there for. They're there for those fun matches.
Right.
It is what it is, man. I don't like seeing mismatches at the youth level. High school is a different story.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I also think it just does damage to the sport in general. And I hope that people can recognize that. You know, because in the end, you know, we could grow this sport if we changed the way that we approached it. If we made it friendlier to new people, if we made it friendlier to new parents. Like that aspect you were talking about, I remember, for example, I at one point had to go to court because my ex-wife didn't want to go to wrestling tournaments anymore. And it wasn't because of the fact that she was worried about them getting hurt. It's that she didn't want to sit in the stands for hours. She had zero interest, you know, and while I didn't like that she wouldn't let me just take them myself, it didn't change the fact that there was something valid to be said. If you have zero interest in this activity and you're sitting up in the stands for 5-6 hours, you might get to watch your kid wrestle for, I don't know, 10 minutes of that.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how long they wrestled, you know, that's difficult. It's hard to get that out there to the rest of the world. It's not like going to the Little League game. It's not like going to the, you know, the Pee Wee football game. It's, you know, and like you said, you know, they don't know what's going on or, you know, when is my kid up? Do they have any idea? You know, like if we're in a situation where we're out in a family and it's in a war zone event, we hit the button when we know everybody's ready to watch a match. You know, that way, you know, your uncle who drove from Florida doesn't miss it because he went to the bathroom, you know. So, you know, we talked about a lot of great stuff, and I definitely want to thank you for coming on. I wanted to ask, you know, did you want to share, like, any of your experiences as far as, like, you know, what has gone on at tournaments? You know, have you had any snags, but, you know, that maybe got worked around, or did you, you know, is there anything that you are
at
looking forward to
at
improving?
At events that I ran?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a tech startup. We rolled it out. It's been a mess a couple times. The first event we ever did, we had no cell phone reception. Very first event, no cell phone reception. So just to be clear, we can work around no cell phones. We can also work around, like, if there's no internet in the building, there's ways. So, like, that was – we had to figure stuff out on the fly. We can also accommodate people that don't have cell phones. You don't need a cell phone to participate. It just makes the experience better. So things that have gone wrong, there was one, so far we've, the most downtime we've ever had is 15 minutes. And I think that's really good for only dropping the ball for 15 minutes. But there's been, I can't even get into it. There's been so many different hiccups with getting it stabilized. We're stable now at this point. It's been 2 years now, so we've got things under control.
Well, you said, well, yeah, I didn't want to say we had to have a total negative. It's just as if you overcame it, and it sounds like you did. That's really good, though. When you talk about internet, it's so random how your phone is going to work at a different high school. I don't know if it has something to do with the way the buildings are built, if there's some kind of material, you know, but it doesn't matter what carrier I have. I could go to one high school and have perfect internet. I could go to another high school and not get anything, like a dead zone.
A year ago, they brought me out to Utah. It was my first big event, and everything went wrong. I was there by myself. I had no help. And there, at one point, there's like a line of like 80 people who need tech support. And I filmed the whole thing. My facial expression is really funny because I'm so flustered and don't know what to do. They brought us back this year because even though I thought it was a mess, it was still better than what people are used to experiencing because we did get the matches. But this year we killed it out there in Utah. I think the event went really smooth. And I'm looking forward to continuing build this thing.
So right now we're just looking at the upcoming Grand River Rumble, Rookie Rumble. Was there anything else that you're signed up for so far?
I have to check. I think there's another one. You'd have to look on our schedule. I haven't really been paying attention because they're all
so
there
is
ahead.
A schedule, though, on your website that people can just look this
on,
up.
It's on wellruntournaments.com. Should be on the homepage.
Right. And anybody who didn't, like, get a chance to write that down, I did put the link to that in the description of this broadcast. So, Jason, this has been an excellent conversation. Is there anything else you wanted to share before we wrap it up?
No, I don't think so. You guys know how to find me, Jason Layton, WellRunTournaments.com. Please support me in my mission to revolutionize wrestling and make it more fun for all children and families.
Thanks again, Jason, for coming on. I really appreciate it. And please continue to do what you're doing. You know, I'm now at a state where I've kind of gotten to the point where my son is settled in, and I know what kind of tournaments to take him to. But especially for some of the new parents who are trying to navigate this tournament thing, you know, I think that this just has a huge amount of benefit to offer to the sport of wrestling. And also, you know, even other combat sports at that point, like you said, you know, people have used it for jiu-jitsu. I would assume you could probably use it for judo. Things
I can't
like that,
wait
so.
Until we can do them all at the same time. That's going to be, we're going to be able to get so many jiu-jitsu kids to try wrestling and so many wrestlers to try jiu-jitsu and to try judo. I think I'm going to be able to really help a marriage between all the combat sports, which is maybe far into the future, but it's something I'm excited about.
That sounds really fantastic. You know, I really hope that this, honestly, you know, when we talk about it, I just look at it. I'm like, why don't we do this all the time? Like, why isn't this what we do? You know, it's like, why don't we just use this? I think that in the future, people are going to look back and like, man, do you remember back in the day when we had to like sit around for, you know, like they'll just look at it like, you know, we'll be the old codgers who went to those tournaments where they sat around forever, and our kids are going to be like, what, you know, like our grandkids or whatever, like, who does that? That's terrible. You know? So I really hope that's what it is. Go ahead.
Any coach out there who wants to bring this to their region, please reach out to me. I will help you bring it. I'll help you bring it there. It's very easy.
Is there any kind of like basic, you know, I guess we were quickly, it occurred to me, like, obviously you're using a computer. Is there any kind of requirements that they should be aware of for equipment?
Nope. Everything can be done with cell phones. I can.
Wow.
From my cell phone. Yeah. You can get to
you
the
can run the event from New York.
Yep.
That's so epic, you know, and I guess they're all just kind of logging on to something. That is so awesome. You know, again, Jason, thanks again for innovating this. I really can't wait to see what the future holds for it. And I hope that some of these bigger organizations latch on to this idea, because this is something that the sport has needed for a long time. And I think that we would get so much more retention if the tournament system was run that way. I've also been waiting for the longest time to come to one of your events. That's why I'll come and watch you, because I'll be in Grand River Rumble. Obviously, my son can't participate in the Rookie Rumble, but you know, one of these days, if you ever have like a, you know, an event where you know that there'll be more of a spread and you're near me, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, because my son would love to try this.
Awesome.
So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Jason, if you don't mind, I'm going to contact you very briefly off the air after this broadcast. Is that okay with you?
Sounds good.
Okay. So everybody, thanks again for tuning into Combat Sports Podcast. I don't currently have a guest set up for my next show yet. I'm working on some MMA fighters. Alicia Zapatella has agreed to come on. She's a ranked atomweight fighter who's also an excellent wrestler in her own right. I've also talked to Christy Garr, who's an excellent wrestler. Josh Parisian has agreed to come on. He was on The Ultimate Fighter. Heavyweight, you know, really cool guy. These are all people who fight out of Scorpion Fighting Systems in Brighton under James Gray, very good coach. My kids are currently actually using his gym to practice. If you have anybody who wants to come on and talk about their career, you know, I'm very good at making guests comfortable. One of my recent guests was so nervous, and I talked to them, and then like when they were finished, they were like, man, that was actually so much fun. So, you know, thank you so much for doing that. So, you know, don't be afraid. I will make you comfortable with this experience. I promise. I've been doing it for a long time. Maybe not as much on this podcast. Obviously, this podcast itself, I've only done now about 10 episodes, but I have a long background in podcasting from my political activist podcast going all the way back to 2008. So I promise I'll take care of you. Just, you know, reach out to me. I'd be happy to bring you on. You know, thanks for tuning in. I do have on the horizon other Alicia Zapatella. Like I did mention, Mitch Clark is already talking about coming on. We just have to like get a situation. He's with his family at the moment, you know, where we can, you know, we can get everything set up. Max Askren has also agreed to come on. I'm looking forward to talking to him. He was one of my son's favorite coaches at the Funky Fresh Camp. So anyway, if there's anybody that you would like to see on, you know, again, even if you're just a fan, don't hesitate to contact me. And thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Combat Sports Podcast.